Good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome to EMForum.org for our first program of 2012, and Happy New Year to all of you. We are looking forward to an exciting year ahead. I am Amy Sebring, and will serve as your moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. It looks like we've got a very good group here today. For our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Now, our topic today is Presidential Policy Directive 8, or PPD 8, on national preparedness, which was issued during March of last year. Since that time, a number of supporting documents have been issued, including the National Preparedness Goal, the National Preparedness System Description, and most recently, the Strategic National Risk Assessment in December. Now, all these documents, which our guests will discuss, and more, are linked from today's background page. But first, for the benefit of our newcomers, we will begin with an overview presentation and then proceed to your questions and comments. Now, if you have any difficulty with live meeting, you can use the feedback drop-down menu at the top right to indicate you're having a problem with live meeting. And then my associates, either Ava Jean Moore or Lori Weber, will try to assist you via private message. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we do ask you not to submit your question or comment until we get to that part of the program. We also ask you not to send any private messages to the speaker or moderator, as we will be busy with the presentation. We are making a recording, which should be available later this afternoon, and a text transcript will be posted early next week. Now, if you're not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready, as well as notices of our future programs. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Donald Doc Lumpkins was responsible for establishing the PPDA Program Executive Office this year and now serves as its Executive Director. He also serves as Branch Chief for National Planning Coordination and Assistance in the National Preparedness Directorate. And prior to joining the federal government, Doc served as Assistant Director for Domestic Preparedness at the Maryland Emergency Management Agency. Please do see today's background page for additional biographical information and, as I mentioned, links to related documents and websites. Welcome back, Doc, and thank you very much for joining us today. I now turn the floor over to you to start us off, please.
Great, and thank you, and thanks everyone on the call for your time today. We'll take a few minutes to give you an overview on Presidential Policy Directive 8, where we stand, and some existing opportunities to participate in the process. Then we'll open it up for your questions. My goal is to split time between the presentation and the questions, so please be well-armed as we get into this. So just we like to start with the bottom line up front for this briefing. We've been working with a lot of folks. We can always do better, but we've been working with a lot of folks to coordinate the implementation of this directive. That's the function of my office. We don't control the pen on every single product. Some we do, and we'll talk to some of those. But our job is to ensure that everybody who wants to has an opportunity to engage in the process in some way, shape, or form based on resources, their ability, and honestly what the law will allow us to do. We continue to work on this and expand. We have ongoing engagement beyond the federal government to provide that participation in development and to also provide feedback to this effort. The first edition, the first deliverable for the goal or for the directive was the National Preparedness Goal. That was due by the 25th of September. That has been provided to the President, accepted by the President, and is now public on the FEMA website. The National Preparedness System, we provided a description of it, again, in accordance with the timeline before Thanksgiving. That also has been accepted by the President, and that is posted. We're now working on both the frameworks and the first post-PPD 8 preparedness report. And then we'll begin wrap up here shortly on the operational plans and the campaign. And we'll talk through the details of each of these. So first things first, a number of you who have heard me speak before or have been to the website, FEMA.gov/PPD8, are familiar with this information. PPD8 does build on the successes and the lessons learned from Homeland Security Presidential Directive 8. This directive, PPD8, looks to link together a number of activities, the ends we want to achieve, which is the goal, the means to achieve it, the tools and processes available to us, or the system, how we actually prepare and deliver those capabilities using the frameworks and the operational plans to convey that, how we report our progress through the preparedness report, and ultimately how we as a nation come together through a sustained effort to build and sustain preparedness, you know, through the campaign. So a couple key principles in all this. We must include everybody. The risks that we talk about when we talk about PPD8 are those greatest risks to our nation. Therefore, no single level of government, not government by itself, can build the capacity necessary to have the capabilities needed to deal with these greatest risks. Everybody has a role. Whether that's individuals, whether that's communities, whether that's private sector, nonprofits, doesn't matter. Everyone has a role. At a very basic level, the role in prevention, see something, say something. The current campaign that is going on right now is an example of the individual's role in preventing a terrorist attack. That whatever we do must use risk as a foundation. That seems obvious, but oftentimes we are driven to make policy decisions, and whenever practical, we want those decisions to be made based on risk and not fear. Make them based on risk and not a lack of information. So through an effective risk methodology, through an understanding, a shared understanding of risk, we know what capabilities to build and to what level. That there is a set of core capabilities that will help us to confront any challenge. That our efforts must be integrated across all of the things we do. Again, whether that's preventing a terrorist incident, responding to a natural disaster, mitigating future threats. And that it is expected that we can measure our progress and our performance. So how do each of these play out? There we go. So the National Preparedness Goal. Right off the bat, if you look at the goal, informed by risk, we conducted a strategic national risk assessment in order to drive that effort. And through that document, we identified a set of capabilities that we'll talk about in a second that help us reduce or manage that risk. Now, those capabilities are marked change from the target capabilities list, but what we have found is that all of the prior work easily connects into this new rubric, and we'll explain the change in capabilities when we look at the list. The focus being that all of these pieces are integrated and are layered and are working together to achieve our objectives. So what is our goal? The one slide that I will read to you, a secure and resilient nation with the capabilities required across the whole community, in other words, everyone, to prevent, protect against, mitigate, respond to, and recover from the threats and hazards that pose the greatest risk. That we as a nation are working together to build and sustain and deliver the capabilities we need to deal with those risks. That is a significant shift from what has previously been considered a very government-centric focus. Now, every single one of us, all 300 million plus, have a stake in the nation's preparedness. The elements of the goal are on this slide. I won't badger these a lot. You can, you know, read the content. There's greater detail up on the website. One of the big things I would note in the goal, besides this emphasis on engaging the whole community, is that we want to begin to establish as a nation a target or the level of capability needed in order to deal with these greatest risks. It's not an easy thing to do. And so in the first edition, you'll see that we identify targets that we hope to refine and expand on those as we go to the next version of the goal. The other thing that I would talk to are the capabilities identified in the goal. On the slide up in front of you now, you'll see a list of capabilities. There are more than 31 boxes, but I am here to tell you that there are 31 distinct capabilities. Some of them repeat across these five areas. Three of them in particular were identified as being so important that if we could not do those effectively, that it would negatively impact our ability to deliver the other 28 capabilities. And those are planning, public information and warning, and operational coordination. So if we cannot get the right plans in place and do the necessary planning, if we can't coordinate those capabilities in a meaningful way, and if we can't effectively educate and engage the public both before and during an event, then many of these other capabilities are really weakened. Now, if the people don't understand what to do and aren't educated on the front end about the threats and hazards they face, then the instructions we give may not make sense, and there may be delays in following those instructions. If we don't work together ahead of time to coordinate the resources we use, then we may find that the resources we need during a crisis are not available. So doing those three capabilities in particular is the reason they are focused to be for all five mission areas. And that allows us to then understand what's necessary for all 31 capabilities. What is the big difference? You know, a lot of people have concerns or questions about the transition from the prior list, the target capabilities list, to this. The target capabilities did not account for mitigation. So right off the bat, you know, that was a gap. Two, the target capabilities were really operationally focused. The reality is that national preparedness is a combination of operations, of steady state programs, things like physical protective measures as an example, and programmatic activities. Threat and hazard identification is one example of that. And that all of these taken together are needed in order to enhance our security and resilience. So the goal was developed during the July-August timeframe. We got a lot of comments, a lot of people, many of you, judging by the attendee list, participated in that process. And we received a lot, over 2,300 comments. Worked very aggressively to get those through. And the document is now out on the street. With the goal in place and knowing the capabilities we needed, now we needed to explain how the tools we had at our disposal would help with that. And so the next requirement from the president to us was to describe very succinctly what a national preparedness system would look like. Why that terminology? Why phrase that way? Because it will take quite a while to put all these pieces in place. And so it was recognized that we couldn't build a national system in 2 months. But we should be able to explain it, describe it, and characterize it in a way that people understand how capabilities are built, sustained, and delivered. And that's what we did. So we established a description of the system that lays out these requirements, these expectations, for planning, organization, equipment, training, and exercises. In particular, planning system piece, resource guidance requirements, the need for recommendations, and an approach to assessment. Again, this first document is a description. So it's not going to get into all the meat of those. That's going to be through a number of follow-on activities over the next many months. But we needed to be able to explain to somebody, when you talk about national preparedness as a system, what are the pieces of that? And so you'll see on the slide, we talked to six particular items. Talk to identifying and assessing risk. And that's at all levels of government. And that risk needs to not only be developed and understood together, but that information needs to be shared. Communities and members of communities need to understand the risks they face. I don't know about you, but you know, when I bought my house, I went and looked at the floodplain maps. I looked at the available information regarding events that have happened in that neighborhood. You know, I looked at the crime rate. I made sure that I understood the threats and hazards in my community before I joined that community. But we all don't do that. And so even at that basic level, all the way up to something as large as a national risk assessment, risk needs to drive this discussion and needs to drive our preparedness. The next piece is estimating capability requirements. We need a mechanism in place to understand not only what we have at our disposal, but what our requirements are and what that gap is. And then a good decision process about how we will address that gap. Because not all gaps can be filled. There are resource constraints. There are priorities. And so there's a discussion about, if I can't address a gap, can I work with my neighbors to address it? Is it a risk I have to accept? And if so, how do I account for that in my planning efforts? The next two, building, sustaining, and delivering capabilities. Not only building and sustaining piece, which gets into organization and equipment, resourcing, grants activities, those things, but then the plans we need in place, both at a strategic level and at an operational level, to actually deliver those capabilities. Additionally, validating capabilities. It is not enough to build them. We need to make sure that they're the right capabilities, that they work effectively. If we've achieved the right level of capabilities, then we need to be able to sustain, and if we haven't, we need to be able to adjust. So whether that's through assessments, whether that's through exercises, or whether that's looking at real-world events that have occurred and drawing lessons learned for us, those together allow us to validate the capabilities that we have built. Finally, much like everything, all of these things need a good refresh cycle, reviewing and updating. And looking at a couple of our options going forward on how to do that at every level of society. There we go. The preparedness system builds on a lot of existing things. My hope is that, especially for those of you who have worked in this field for quite a while, that that list of six items on the last slide really should not have surprised you. You probably looked at that list and went, wow, you know, that's kind of what we do already. I would hope so. I would hope that that is your process. Again, the intent with PPD 8 is that we are evolving. We are not revolutionizing. In other words, we're not throwing out things that work. What we do want to do is tweak them, expand them, make sure that they work effectively across the five missions. Again, prevent, protect, mitigate, respond, and recover. We work with a number of people. That writing team was about half and half, half fed, half non-fed. Got a lot of input from others, and we drew from a lot of experience that you and information many of you in the community had already provided. You know, maybe you were on a task force that had issued a report. Maybe you participated in an existing assessment effort. Maybe you were involved in an article in a journal. We looked at a lot of those pieces to very quickly build a small, concise description of what the system would look like. Now, as I mentioned, one piece of that system so we talked here, this is slide 13. We talked to a number of these elements again already, so I won't repeat the slide too much. The big thing, though, again, is that, or two points I would like to hit on this slide. One, we are using the National Incident Management System as a foundation for this. That means we'll have to take a look at current resource typing and things like that to make sure that we're effectively addressing the five mission areas. The other piece of this puzzle is that this is a system description. We now have to look at how to implement it. And so over the next several weeks, we'll be working with partners throughout the community to understand what already exists, what are the impacts of the system, where can we say, okay, we already have the tools in place, and then put resources in areas where we need to develop. So this is by no means a deliverable that is a one and done. Rather, this deliverable was a starting point for a set of efforts that will be going on for months to come. So slide 14, as I mentioned, planning is a key element of the preparedness system, and the planning frameworks are a crucial aspect of that. So a number of you, all of you are probably familiar with the National Response Framework as it currently exists. The National Response Framework as it's written right now is a combination of policy, doctrine and guidance, and operational planning. So it is what was needed at the time. Under Presidential Policy Directive 8, frameworks are meant to be much more strategic documents. They lay the conceptual groundwork. They explain the coordinating structures. Sticking with the response example, that would be the ESS. They lay out really the scope of the mission. Many of those operational elements will go into later documents, and we'll explain those in a second. So these frameworks are really meant to be nice, concise, tight documents that a user can pick up and understand what a particular mission area, for example, prevention, I could pick it up, understand what prevention is about, conceptually understand my role in prevention, and get a sense of the kinds of things that I might do organizationally to support prevention activities. So they're really that strategic level guidance and doctrine that help us conceptualize and understand a particular mission. The other thing they do is to help us understand how that activity connects with others. So what are the connection points between prevention and protection, or prevention and response, and so on. So each one of these five frameworks will do that. Now, and again, wherever possible, build and use existing material. So again, this is not to throw out a national strategy or the National Infrastructure Protection Plan, or, you know, you can sort of, the list goes on, but rather to take the information from those and to incorporate them into a single document that explains the scope of that particular mission. Right now, those frameworks are under their initial development. The disaster framework, however, was complete. That started a number of years ago. A number of you are familiar with that already. It did not make sense to delay that effort. That product is consistent with PPD-8. So they finished. We need to now revise the National Response Framework and develop the three remaining frameworks. So we're working with those four groups very closely and identifying a number of opportunities where you can provide input into that process, and we'll talk about that towards the end. A couple other things I want to bring to your attention that we've talked about previously on this forum. The interagency operational plans. For each one of these frameworks, there will be an operational plan. So all those operational things from the NRF don't get lost. They stay true, but they'll move over to these operational plans. These are definitely focused on how the federal government will support everybody. So everything I've said to you at this point, national frameworks, national system, national goal, these are federal documents. That is the span of our control. So we will lay out how we will work together to support the rest of the nation. to whether it's preventing an incident, whether it's mitigation, doesn't matter. But to bring the capabilities to bear, to understand the needed tasks and resources in order to be successful. And we'll do that in a way that's consistent with the state and local planning guidance, with CPG 101. That way people can understand the process, follow it, and get a sense of how they better connect. And more to the point, how the federal government will better connect with their ongoing planning efforts. The last two pieces here, and then we'll get to the how do you get to play, building and sustaining preparedness. One of the requirements of PPD 8 is that we look at a number of issues on that are ongoing issues to building and sustaining preparedness, whether that's many of the outreach campaigns we have, whether that's our preparedness as a federal government, the grants and technical assistance programs, or even research and development. We are beginning to ramp up these efforts now, and so we'll be looking for ideas and inputs, and you'll see that through a number of our tools and a number of our outreach efforts. And potentially this is a separate briefing and discussion all by itself. In particular, we are first focusing on the comprehensive campaign police. So how do we take a number of existing efforts like Ready.gov, like See Something, Say Something, Citizen Corps, and others, and link those together into a comprehensive campaign that allows us to be more efficient in our approach, allows us to find gaps in our preparedness, and allows us to take advantage of opportunities to make decisive advances in national preparedness. So, for example, around the upcoming national level exercise, which components of this campaign should we provide greater resources to in order to improve, to see improvements in the nation's overall preparedness? So being able to take advantage of those opportunities, be more flexible, more adept in our actions. And that is just now ramping up. So that's very early. That is ripe for opportunity for you to shoot an email, send in an idea, to give us your thoughts on that particular item. Finally, we're the government. We have to issue a report. It's just something we do. We are expected to, on an annual basis, report on our progress as a nation, not as the federal government, on building these capabilities. Now, wherever possible, we already do a lot of data calls to the state and local community. Our intent is to continue to simply use those data processes. So instead of creating something new or an additional burden, leverage what you are already doing, meld that with federal data collection, bring in the opportunity for private sector and the public and others to provide their input, and bring that together into a report. So that's currently under development. That is due to the White House at the end of March. So very little time to do this. So, how do you get involved? Well, as you've certainly probably identified at this point, PPD 8 operates under a very aggressive timeline. I was on a call earlier. Somebody asked why that timeline. There's two reasons. There is the process reason, which is we will fill the time allotted. So if you give us a year to do something, it'll take a year. If you give us 5 years to do something, it'll take 5 years. So a nice short timeline ensures that we get things done. That's a sort of a benefit. That's a side effect of the timeline. The real benefit of this approach is that it allows us to move very quickly to a decision process. These are complex issues, and we could spend a lot of time arguing and debating and dissecting the minutiae of each mission, of each capability. And again, we would fill all the time allotted and probably then some. This approach allows us to move very quickly to get to a decision, to get pen to paper, to capture people's thoughts, and get it out there for use, for validation, and for correction. So you'll note that a number of the things that we've put out already and things that we'll be putting out in the future will be marked first edition. And each one of them will carry a timeline for review, that we will come back during a certain period and take a look at this again. The reality is that these products will not be 100% perfect, because they will need to be used in order for us to truly understand what's working well and where we need to enhance the product. So while the timeline is challenging, and the timeline forces us to get a little creative, it is probably one of the best aspects of this process, because it does force us to move the ball down the field. To use the football parlance, we are constantly in a two-minute drill. And I don't know about you, but I have certainly noticed over the last 16, 17 weeks, or certainly even last week, a number of teams perform better in the last 2 minutes of a football game than they do in the other 58 minutes. And I think it is because it is time to think, but it's not time to overthink. So how do you get to play in that then? I mean, with that time constraint, that doesn't afford a lot of opportunities. Well, whenever possible, first off, we are trying to involve people directly in the writing teams. Resource-wise, that's not always practical. For legal reasons, that can be a challenge. But wherever we can, we're trying to have non-feds in the room. Even when we can't, there are a lot of opportunities to provide comment during development. One, there is information up on the PPD 8 website about what we have going on and what it is we're doing, and you see the webpage link right there. Take a look at the goal. Take a look at the system. Take a look at the directive. And if you have an idea about how we might better include, you know, maybe it's state and local, maybe it's individuals, how we identify their roles and responsibilities, what some of the issues might be that we need to consider, shoot us an email. Please. Give us your ideas and your input. My office is an executive office. We are coordinating this effort. We by no means claim to be the subject matter brain trust on any of these mission areas or any of these topics. We need your ideas, your input, your thoughts as to what we should be thinking about as we develop these products. So that's one way to go about it. If you like something a little bit more interactive, we have established a portal through IdeaScale. You'll see the link there, fema.ideascale.com, where we will be posting topics for discussion. Right now on IdeaScale, we have the National Preparedness Report up. Not the National Preparedness Report, excuse me, but rather a topic of discussion for the National Preparedness Report. We'll see if this switches over or not. Or Amy could certainly mock me while I'm trying to switch it over.
It's up. It's up.
Okay, great. You guys can see it. I can't. oh, there we go. Now my screen just refreshed. But you'll see right on this page here, we have a link for the National Preparedness Report discussion and a link for the mitigation framework discussion. Yeah, this is your opportunity to provide your ideas, your input, into those development pieces. You see mitigation there now. Over the next few days, we will post links for prevention, response, and protection as well. And so as you can see here on this page, we have a couple of things specifically we're asking people about, and I've highlighted that section. You know, people who play leadership roles and examples of activities, whether that's to lessen the impact, to get a sense from you of, you know, if you were looking back from, you know, 10 years from now, what made your community more resilient? So we are seeding these discussions across the board. Again, prevention, protection, and response will come up shortly as well. And we are constantly monitoring this. We love to see the discussion. We love to see the ideas. And an interesting facet of this tool is that it allows people to vote. So we get a sense of, you know, somebody posts a comment. It's always hard to tell under a normal bulletin board, you know, is that one person? Do a lot of people feel that way? What's the story? people can very quickly go in and say, you know what, I really agree, I really disagree. And we can get a sense of what the temperature is on that issue. Finally, of course, we're going to provide opportunities at various stages in this process for you to provide a comment on product. That's not in the writing. That is definitely much more sort of reaction and feedback and what are we missing. So it will still affect the content. But these first two options on the slide allow you to directly participate during the writing phase. Right now, what's going on, and to get your ideas in front of the writing teams. So that's it. There's a lot going on. Sadie, let's open it up for questions, but while we have it open for questions, I'm going to leave slide 19 up.
I'll come back to it, Doc. Thank you so much for that overview. I think that was very helpful. We will proceed to our Q&A now. I have to put instructions up here for a moment. To submit your comment or ask a question, you just click on Q&A from the top menu, and then you'll type in the top half of the box that opens up. Then click on Ask or hit Enter. There is a hand-raising feature there, but we do not use that feature. When you click on Ask, your comment or question will go to a moderator panel, and then I will announce who the question is from and read the question aloud, and our guest will respond via this bridge. I will type a little text OK after I've read it, and then the text of the question will appear on your screen. Now, because of the way live meeting works, you will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time. Please keep it your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. We want to get through as many as we possibly can. So we are ready to begin now. So please enter your comment or question at any time. I will now change back to this contact information. And we have a couple questions here. Okay, let's see. I have a question on from David Javier, who just asks whether the presentation will be made available on the FEMA.gov PPD 8 website. We will have a copy of the slides posted later on today, and we will also get you a link if you're on our mailing list. Now, I have a question from Derek White, and I'm sorry, Doc, are you going to post your slides, make your slides available on PPD 8 site?
A lot of this content is up there already, but we'll take a look at putting the slide deck up, too.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, I have a question from Derek White, who asks, how will this affect the HC process for exercises? I think that's the Homeland Security Exercise and Evaluation Program, something like that. And will previous HC training need to be retaken by students and HC trainers to take PPD-8 into account? That's part of your validation piece, is it not, Doc?
Sure. So one of the things we're doing right now is looking at, in greater detail, what the specific impacts would be. So I will speak out of school a little bit because I'm not with the exercise office, not with the exercise division, but PPD-8 doesn't change the way that we design or manage or evaluate exercises process-wise. So if you've been through AC training, I went through one of the very first ones, none of that would be affected. Where you might see a change is that certainly the content of the exercise evaluation guides, we'll need to take a look and see if updates are needed there because of the transition from the target capabilities to the core capabilities. But the actual conduct of exercises isn't really affected by the content in PPD-8. In fact, we specifically reference in the preparedness system that the National Exercise Program and HC are critical elements.
Great. I've got a question from Isabel McCurdy. She's asking, what are, quote, the greatest risks as defined in your goal, And she is from Canada, so she wants to know if Canada was involved in the development process.
So I'll answer the easy one first, which is the back end of that. No, we did not specifically engage any foreign nation, to the U.S. anyway, in the development process. We have since, however, begun discussions with a number of our partners. I don't know if Canada is one of them. I would need to look to brief them up on the effort, to make sure they understood our activities, to answer questions, and to provide them any information or materials they might need as they consider updates to their preparedness efforts as well. In terms of the greatest risks, we identify a number in the preparedness goal of those risks. Clearly, as you can imagine, there are a number of natural hazards which can cause regionalized catastrophic impacts, whether that's, you know, very large hurricanes, massive multi-state snowstorms, et cetera. And we identify a number of threats and hazards in the goal. Terrorism obviously remains a continuous concern when it comes to greatest risk, but both on two fronts, one being the potential use of a weapon of mass destruction, but also even a large-scale conventional attack, something similar to the incident in Mumbai, India, is certainly one of the greater risks that we need to take a look at, and even cyber. I know we list cyber as one of the things that poses a great risk. And cyber isn't terrorism. I mean, cybersecurity issues could be an act of terrorism, could be a criminal act, could be just a flaw in the system. I mean, there's a lot of flexibility there. So you'll find that there's a pretty solid balance in the goal between what we would kind of refer to as natural, some of the technological, and then, of course, the human cause or adversarial things like terrorism. So, and the results, those are the sort of highlighted results from a strategic national risk assessment that was done, the summary of which is also posted on the PPDA website.
Yes, exactly. And if I may just ask a follow-up question to that, Doc. So is this going to basically replace the old 16 national planning scenarios, the SNR?
Well, one of the trick here when we switch from HSPD-8 to PPD-8 is the planning scenarios helped us to a certain degree. They got us to a point. The problem we found is that people were, and we were certainly a culprit in this, were treating them as one size fits all. With PPD-8, we really want to use risk to be that driver. And so the risks that we face at a national level, while comprised of risks we face at all levels of government and all levels of society, are not the same. So the risk that you might have, let's say, in British Columbia may not be the same as the risk you would have in a different part of Canada, and certainly may not be the risks that Canada is concerned about nationwide. You know, or to look at this another way, I'm from Maryland. What concerns Baltimore may not concern the state, and what concerns the state of Maryland may not concern the nation. But the reality is that there are risks for all three of us. And so Baltimore would plan to, or another city would look at the risks that it faces and build its capability and capacity. And that in turn will ultimately inform the state risks and a national risk.
Okay. Thank you. We have a question that I was expecting, and I'm sure you were too, Doc. This is from S. Atia Martin, who asks, how will the core capabilities change the Homeland Security Grant Program priorities, requirements, and structures?
Well, with FY11, we already started using the core capabilities. So in and of themselves, you've seen the change. And that is that, you know, largely that affects reporting for those grants. The state preparedness report, which is the one that was just due, asked jurisdictions to look at the core capabilities, a select set that were of the best alignment to the TCLs, and help to and begin that soft transition. That transition will begin further in FY12. We are still sorting out the details of all of that. But the transition from the target capabilities list to the core capabilities list in and of itself doesn't cause a dramatic change in the grant programs. You know, there are plenty of other things that have been going on with, you know, congressional requirements, with the downsizing of the grant programs and all, but I think will have a much more significant impact than the transition from the TCLs to the core capabilities.
Okay. I have a question from John Volcino, who asked, the former national preparedness goal also included a number of national priorities, so for example, IEDs, NIMS compliance, community prep, et cetera, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
I see that this version does not include any national priorities. Why is that?
When we switched to this goal, the focus was to be on the missions themselves. So instead of isolating out a specific set of priorities, which is not to say that that doesn't happen in follow-up, was instead to say we have one priority, and that is a secure and resilient nation. We have a number of tools at our disposal and the 31 capabilities to achieve that goal. In using those capabilities as the focus, we in effect have to hit every one of those priorities that was identified under the National Preparedness Guidelines. You know, in order to truly achieve these 31 capabilities, we need to have communities involved. We need to improve our intelligence and information sharing. We need to look at cyber issues. You know, so in some ways, it's a recognition that the capabilities need to be the focus. Two, that the goal needed to be a national document. What that means, then, is that what might be the priorities for the federal government may not necessarily be the priorities for a county. So that while we all need to consider the 31 capabilities, the level of capacity for a particular capability and the prioritization of those capabilities would be driven by your needs as opposed to a single sort of one-size-fits-all set of needs chosen on this end.
Good deal. A question from W. Russ Webster, and he asked, Doc, can you comment in a general sense on the roles of the FEMA regions in the operationalization of PPD-8?
Yeah, I cannot say that word very well either,
yeah.
So I'm with you there. Right now, it's largely been supporting the outreach and engagement. For this. As we move forward, now that we have the system description and need to actually look at how we implement that system, we're going to have to sit down with the FEMA regions. And we've discussed this recently in December as well at a meeting with the leadership to better lay out the role of the FEMA regions. I see that role certainly in some ways expanding, but the reality is that a lot of what the regions do already it complements the PPD-8 effort. You know, we have NIMS coordinators in the regions. We work day in and day out through the regional staff on exercises and training and grants management and all these things. So, again, this is an evolution, not a revolution. Will there be an impact? Will there be a greater role for the regions? Absolutely. But this is not sort of the earth-shattering event that one might associate with a presidential directive.
I've got a question I want to make sure that we cover today. Can you talk a little bit about measuring preparedness? You know, there's been some criticism perhaps in the past that we're doing too much bean counting on the number of equipment we have. Are we going to have a new approach to measuring preparedness going forward?
I can't get into a whole lot of detail yet. But I do think you're going to see a lot of improvement in how we do that. The focus will be on capability and, I believe, less on bean counting per se, but focusing on our real progress to achieve capability and working with everybody in the community to identify those marks. So what are those national targets, and then what are the targets for each of the components?
And I think that
more to come.
You'd be more than happy to get some comments on the idea scale?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, very good. As I said, I know you have to leave a little bit early, Doc, about five of. Is that going to work for you?
Sure.
Okay. We're trying to get in as many as we can here in the next 5 minutes. And again, if we don't get to you, please do look at the address on the slide that's showing currently or participate on the idea scale. All right. John Vocino asks, could you speak to the mission of mitigation, especially how it differs with protection and prevention missions? I ask because the definitions for each seem indistinguishable to a cold reader, but when reviewing the capabilities for each one, see significant differences. Appreciate your insights. And if I can tag on to that, Doc, if you could kind of describe what you all have in mind on the mitigation framework piece of this, I'm sure a lot of folks would be interested.
I'll break the bad news first. We're working with the mitigation folks now on their ideas of the framework, so I'm going to leave that as a cliffhanger. Again, you can see on the Idea Scale website where their thinking is and where they're seeking ideas. There is no bright line between mitigation and protection and prevention, and especially between mitigation and protection. A lot of the focus on protection has been on critical infrastructure protection, which gets to specific assets and key resources and things like that, where mitigation certainly tends to be much more focused on entire communities. Traditionally, there's been this sort of soft split where a lot of the terrorism piece has ended up with protection and everything that isn't terrorism has ended up with mitigation. But with this directive, that blurring that was referenced by the person with the question was made even blurrier because mitigation now has to get into the resilience of critical infrastructure, and protection is expected to be more than just terrorism. How that shakes out, we've explained some of the goal a little bit, but as we build the frameworks over the next several months, my hope is we can provide a little bit more clarity as to those connection points. Prevention, in some ways, is very straightforward, especially the framework is specifically focused on preventing an imminent terrorist threat. So prevention is very much focused on the bad guy, where protection and mitigation are looking, protection is looking much more at that, how do we, stop a terrorist attack from occurring? How do we ensure our infrastructure is well protected, well defended? And mitigation is looking at those actions we take over the long term to reduce the likelihood and consequences across entire communities. I know I didn't make it much clearer, if any at all, but it is one of the things that we ourselves are looking at ways to provide greater clarity over the next several months.
I do want to get one more question of my own in. Are you planning on developing additional CPG guides in support of this?
We are. The expectation is that we will provide guidance to state, local, tribal, and territorial partners in support of each one of the mission areas. So there will be more to come on that, but I would expect to see those soon, to see an announcement soon of how we're proceeding with that.
All righty. A question from Paul Timmons, who asks, in reference to the whole community approach, can you share briefly feedback by state leadership and partners on the current PPD-8 development?
Sure. So, and unfortunately, I will have to end on this one.
Okay.
General feedback has been supportive. There's obviously a lot of questions about the long-term implications of this. We have afforded, for any state who's come in, and certainly a number of the cities who've come in, who have said, hey, we want to directly participate in development, we're providing that opportunities. We have state and local partners sitting on these writing teams, actually helping develop the product, which has helped with engagement to get issues addressed quickly, that sort of thing. It is a wait and see. I think the frameworks You know, the goal and the system were sort of the high doctrine. People have questions. Obviously, everybody's curious. Many of the questions you all have asked today, they have asked as well, and we've been answering as best we can. But I think as this process moves forward and we get a better sense of the real implications, then there'll be more opportunities to engage them directly to get their ideas of how to best implement this effort. So generally positive. Not a lot of people upset, but obviously everybody has questions and concerns as this moves forward, and we're doing our best to either answer them or explain why we can't answer them yet.
And on that note, we will wrap it up. On behalf of Ada Dean and myself and all our participants today, Doc, thank you again for taking the time to share the information with us. It seems you have your work cut out for you this coming year, and we wish you every success.
I thank you much for your time, and I look forward to coming back to you with some more stuff over the next many months.
That will be wonderful. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And if we did not get to your question today, there is this address up here that you can write to and or use the FEMA idea scale to get your input in. But before you do run off, please take a moment to complete this very short feedback form for us. Our next program will take place Wednesday, January 25th, and please do watch for our announcement and plan to be with us then. Again, if you are not on a mailing list, if you go to our homepage, www.emforum.org, there is a place to subscribe on the left side of our homepage. In the meantime, until next time, thanks to everyone for participating today. Thanks for your great input. Please do come again and have a wonderful afternoon. We are adjourned. Thank you.